Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to RNIB Tech Talk, your regular source of accessible technology, news, reviews and interviews. And we're very excited to bring you a completely new format to Tech Talk. So if you have listened before, bear with us because you're going to notice a few changes. Your feedback, of course, is always welcome. So do get in touch with the programme if there's anything you'd like to share. That email address, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You're listening to RNIB Tech Talk with me, Dave Williams. And I'm not alone. I'm joined by two co-hosts, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. Hello, Tasneem. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Dave. I'm Tasneem, and my background is psychology. I work full-time for the NHS, and I'm very happy to be here co-hosting with yourself and Callum. And it's a good job you're not on your own, Dave, because I think, you know, listeners might get a little bit bored. So we're here to help you out.
Very much appreciate that. Callum, you are a tech guy, right?
Yeah, so I'm Callum. My background is in technology, so I've had a strong interest in technology from a very young age, really. I've got a degree in computer networking and security, and I now work for BT as part of their accessibility team. And I've also been completely blind from birth, so I'm a screen reader user, use JAWS regularly, voiceover on iOS. And I'm really excited to be here. The new Tech Talk is back.
It is indeed, yeah, very exciting stuff. And as mentioned, I'm Dave Williams. I've worked in the assistive technology industry. I've developed, designed, tested, marketed, trained on screen readers and braille displays and all that good stuff. I also worked with the American Council of the Blind presenting their main menu technology show back in the midst of time, if you remember that. And I've been with RNIB now for a couple of years. So folks, I'm really looking forward to hearing your perspectives and contributions for the next version of RNIB Tech Talk. Coming up, we have a product review of the Envision glasses. We'll be speaking with a fascinating blind lady whose journey in assistive technology took her from her life in the United States to a new role at an assistive technology in South Korea. And we'll also hear a roundup of the latest news from accessible technology. Many of us are now using smart speakers to enhance our independence and daily lives. Products like the Amazon Echo, Google Home, and the Apple Home Pod can be summoned with just a voice command to get the latest news, weather, and even read RNIB talking books. Darren Pascal is along now from Thomas Pocklington Trust with his demonstration on how you go about setting up an Amazon Echo Dot.
Let's take a look at the Amazon Echo Dot smart speaker. What does an Echo Dot look like? If I take it out of the box here, what we have is a small disc. On the top, there are four buttons, and they're kind of arranged around the edge of this circle, if you like. Think of it like a clock face. At 12 o'clock, we've got the volume up button. At 3 o'clock, there is a button with a round dot in the middle of it, the action button. On the bottom at 6 o'clock, we've got the volume down button, which has a very nice tactile minus sign dash going through it. And at 9 o'clock, there is a microphone on-off button. It's on by default. On the edge of the speaker itself, if we move toward the top, so toward the 12 o'clock position, there are two sockets. The left of those is an auxiliary jack, so if you wanted to plug this in with a cable to a speaker or some other audio device. And the one on the right, that socket is the plug socket to give it power. So I'm just going to plug this in, and we're going to wait for it to wake up.
Hello. To continue, download the Alexa app.
So I've just opened up the app and I've had a prompt here to set up the Echo Dot that I've just plugged in.
Echo Dot can be set up by tapping continue. You agree to Amazon's conditions of use, link, and all the terms found here. Link, later, button, continue.
So we've got a couple of buttons there, later and continue. So I'm just going to double tap continue and we'll see what happens.
Loading, searching for Wi-Fi.
So searching for Wi-Fi, what's happening here? There are actually two things that are happening simultaneously. One, it's looking to see what Wi-Fi networks are available, but it's also looking to see if there are any available Wi-Fi networks that happen to correspond with Wi-Fi networks that it already knows about. Now, since I already have Amazon devices active on my Amazon account in this home, it already knows my Wi-Fi network and password, and it's going to try and connect straight away. You might not be that lucky, and if that's the case, then there's a way that you can tell it explicitly which Wi-Fi network to go to. Let's flick around this screen.
Spotlight, your Echo Dot is now connected to...
So, it's spotted that, indeed, I have a Wi-Fi network active here that it knows about. But let's say I wanted it to be a different one. Maybe I'm setting this up for somebody else. How do you do that? So, if we flick one more time.
Tap to change Wi-Fi button.
Tap to change Wi-Fi. So, if we double tap that, we can then enter the details of the network name and password. Now, since I'm already connected, I'm just going to flick right again.
Continue button.
And there's the continue button. I'm just going to double tap that.
Continue. English United Kingdom.
So the next screen asks you which language you would like to use your new Echo smart speaker with. Now, English United Kingdom is already selected, so I'm just going to find the continue button. Again, it should be toward the bottom of the screen.
Continue button.
And there it is. So just going to double tap.
Setup. Grouping two or more of your devices in the same room helps them work and play together better.
So this screen allows you to designate your smart speaker as belonging to or being present or situated in a specific room in your house. Now, this is useful because, say you have more than one smart speaker, you can refer to them as kitchen or hallway, lounge, living room, whatever it might be. So this screen allows you to make that choice. Now, I happen to be sitting in a conservatory at this point, so that is the room choice that I'm going to look for here.
Bedroom, conservatory, radio button.
It's a radio button, so I'm just going to double tap to select it.
Setup, continue, button.
So I can now double tap.
Loading.
So this screen allows you to set the address of your Amazon smart speaker. This can be particularly useful for weather reports, say, getting an idea of the local weather conditions where you are. But you don't have to do this. You can skip this if you want to. If you're already using Amazon in any way and have a default delivery address established, this will be listed here. I'm just going to go through and double tap to accept that and continue.
Continue. Get started with Alexa. Your Echo Dot is ready.
Your Echo is ready.
Let's go. Button.
So let's test this out, shall we? Alexa, what's the weather like?
Right now in High Wycombe, it's 4 degrees Celsius with clear skies and sun. Today's forecast has mostly sunny weather, with a high of 7 degrees and a low of minus 1 degrees.
One other thing to remind you of. So, of these four buttons on the top of the Amazon Echo Dot smart speaker, there is a microphone on-off button at 9 o'clock. When you press this, you'll hear a tone. It'll either be a low tone or a slightly higher tone. That turns the microphone on and off. If we press this now, it's a relatively low tone, and that means we've disabled it. Let's press it one more time. And that slightly higher pitch tone indicates that the speaker is now listening out for the wake word.
Darren Pascal there from Thomas Pocklington Trust with his demonstration of how a blind person can independently set up an Amazon Echo Dot. Callum, you're with us. Do you have a smart speaker? Of course you do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Who doesn't these days? Yeah. I've got a few Amazon Echoes around the house.
Yeah. And what do you do with yours?
All sorts. Music, radio, podcasts, news, books, pretty much everything. And, smart home. There's even some where you can use them to recognize products. You know, if you've got items in your cupboards or your fridge and you want to recognise them, you can use that.
Yeah, well, we should get you to demonstrate that for us, certainly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, on the smart home stuff, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've got ours hooked up with the smart light bulbs and the central heating. So that's fantastic. You know, in the past, you know, we weren't able to read the thermostat. And now there's no argument about what the temperature is inside.
Yeah, it's incredible. And accidentally accessible as well, which is really nice.
Yeah, very inclusive. So, alrighty, well, we'll look forward to hearing your demonstration of the show and tell feature at some point here on RNIB Tech Talk. If you're a regular listener to RNIB Tech Talk, then of course your life has been touched by accessible technology. And our next guest is a remarkable lady, Jenny Axler, whose career took her from a life in the United States to the other side of the world, where she now works for an assistive technology company in South Korea. Thanks for joining us, Jenny. Tell us a bit about your background.
Hello, everyone. I am Jenny Axler. I work at the HIMSS International headquarters in South Korea. I've worked here for about 8 years. I have been in the tech field for about 15 years. I didn't start out thinking that I would do that, but I worked for Levelstar, which is a company that's not around anymore, but created a little Linux device. And then I moved on to HIMSS Incorporated in the United States, and I worked there for a little over 3 years, and then I moved to the headquarters in Korea.
You don't come from a technology background, as I understand it.
I actually studied literature, social work, and religion in college. I actually have 3 college degrees. And then I happened to get married to someone who lived in a very rural area, and I needed to find something that I could do from home. So I did some transcription work for a while for a mainstream company. And then I started actually beta testing for this company that I mentioned called Levelstar. And from there, I started doing podcasts and tutorials for them. Actually, I started doing a few podcasts, and they're like, why don't you make this into a whole tutorial series? And then I ended up writing their user manual because they didn't have someone to do that. And then I did a little tech support when the tech support guy was gone, and it just kind of grew from there.
So you became inveigled in technology.
Yeah, it just kind of happened by accident. And it turned out that I really kind of fell in love with it. I enjoyed doing the audio video part. I really enjoyed the writing. I did study literature. I ended up, they needed someone for HIMSS Incorporated in the United States. And of course, I'd done all these different things, tech support, manual writing, audio tutorials. And that's actually what got me the job. My resume wasn't very full of tech information, but they actually went to the website and saw my work. And they wanted someone who could do all those different things. Because of course, you can find someone to do tech support, you can find someone who can write for you, and they might be able to also do training. But to find someone who does all of that, they weren't able to really find too many people who could do that. So that was one thing that appealed, and they hired me to do that. And I was the tech support department for a while at HIMSS Inc. Then they hired a partner for me. And I was really interested in being closer to the development. And when I was first hired there, they actually brought us to Korea for training, which was really exciting to me. And I was just so interested in the whole process, the whole development process. They also had an issue where they had sighted Koreans trying to do tech support for blind people in English, and it just wasn't working out well because they weren't users. It was a different language. And I thought, you know, I could do that. And so I actually wrote to the vice president, who I had known very well and who was instrumental in hiring me for HIMSS Inc. And I said, you know, I'd really be interested in doing this. And I was already doing marketing materials for them at night. I was doing a lot of stuff in the international office, even when I worked in the US. And so they actually agreed that this would be a great thing if I was willing to do it. So a couple months later, there I was.
How do you approach learning a new piece of technology? I remember devices like the Braille and Speak from the late 80s. And nobody knew how to use it. I just had to figure it out on my own, you know, and go and get the manual. I mean, who reads manuals, right? So how do you learn a new piece of technology?
Actually, I did the same thing because my teacher for the visually impaired had absolutely no idea. She just gave me, it was the old Fred Gassoni cassette tape, and she said, go to it. And a few years later, we got another student in the school, and I actually ended up teaching her because, again, the TVI didn't know. And so that's kind of stuck with me, this sort of self-teaching, and I've continued to do that. That's part of the reason I ended up in this field, really. I kind of brought myself here in many ways because I just enjoy the technology so much. So I'm not afraid to read a manual, and I'm not afraid to Google search a problem, you know, if something happens. Our Google search forums or whatever I need to do. In fact, I have a really hard time receiving training. I could follow perhaps a tutorial that's already been done, but even a lot of audio tutorials, it's interesting because I produce them and I create them, but I actually don't use them. I really prefer to read documentation so that I can do it. I can stop and do it as I go. And just, I also prefer it in Braille. It's just, I'm not sure why, but that's just the way that I prefer to do things.
And how did you go from being a customer and a consumer of technology to getting a career in technology?
I think it was really that experience with Levelstar. I was working remotely for them and it was actually part-time. But once I did that, I was kind of hooked on it. And it was really interesting because I said that to my sister when I was doing some sales thing for them. And I said, you know, I really am into this and I enjoy this. And she goes, what do you mean? You've always been into this. And I was like, I didn't really recognize that in myself. I did always enjoy the tech. You know, I was always enthralled by it. As I mentioned, I was enthralled by refreshable Braille when I first experienced that. I was enthralled by the various things that I could do. What I was always excited about was what I could do with it, like how much more efficient I could be, what I could do by myself. You know, when I was growing up, whenever I'd ask a question or my brother or sister would ask a question, when they would ask a question, it was always, go look it up. And we had this really huge thing of encyclopedias, whole huge bookcase of them. And that's what they would do. They would go in and look up the information. Well, of course, I didn't have that option. And so I usually just got the answer. And I just remember when I was able to do that on the web with my Braille note and then read books from Bookshare, it was like, oh, I can look it up and I can look it up just about as easily as they can. And so I was always just enthralled with it and how independent it could make me. My work in America brought me to Korea, and I knew I wanted to be closer to the development. And so when that opportunity came, I came here. And again, I've just, you know, done more and more with it. So it's just sort of grown. And most of it is, you know, out of my own love for what I have been able to learn to do and how much more independent it's made me, and wanting other blind people to have that same option. That's where my passion is. I want them to be able to do everything I can.
And now, of course, you're with HIMSS and you live and work in South Korea. Tell us about that and the role that technology plays in your day-to-day.
So it's been very interesting. I came here not knowing the language at all. And I was really concerned about that because I said, you know, I don't have time to learn Korean. When I discussed this with the VP about coming over, and he decided, yes, let's have you come over as soon as possible. I said, oh, but you know, should I prepare? Nah, don't worry about that. You can learn when you get here. And I wish I had prepared a little bit more, but what happened to be the saving grace there was our own products, because we of course had Korean products and they also read English. So I was able to use, I found a very accessible PDF online course that also had video content, but the PDFs, I could actually read both the Korean and the English in the textbook. So I could hear the TTS pronounce it. And then of course I had the videos with the real people actually pronouncing it, but I could also read it and I could read the Korean and English Braille. It was just really fantastic. And so again, accessible and portable. I did end up getting a tutor here. So that just helped me tremendously. But I will say, I am a little bit surprised that I'm still here after 8 years. And so I didn't necessarily continue my studies as well as I should have. Korean's a very difficult language to learn. So I still use a lot of Google Translation. I get Korean emails all the time. Now, a lot of those I can read. So for example, on my iPhone, it easily switches between Korean and English TTS. So if I receive a text or email, I can hear it in both. And a lot of times I really can understand it without any translation. But if I want to, I can easily use Apple or Google Translate, you know, on my PC or my phone. And I've recently started using AI in meetings. I've been involved in a few more product planning meetings recently. And so I've needed to actually use more translation, because I understand a lot better if I do use translation than just listening to the direct Korean. So I've been doing that, where I take my iPad mini in and I have it use Microsoft Translator. Seems to be the best one, although I'm still somewhat figuring out. I tried different interfaces and, you know, try different ones. But so I'm actually doing that. And the other day, the host of the meeting actually gave us a document beforehand in Korean. So I translated that via Google and I had that on my Braille Sense. And then I was translating him live on my phone, actually. And I had an earbud in listening to that. So I was reading with one hand and controlling the phone with the other and listening to him in Korean. So I was very definitely multitasking, but it's really great. It really changes the game having AI translation and being able to do that on my phone and my iPad and even some on my Braille Sense too.
Any other gadgets that you'd recommend that people check out? I remember you showing me a really teeny tiny Windows laptop.
You know, I found that not to be as powerful as I wanted it to be, but I still love it. It's adorable. And on the go, it's still pretty cool. That was the GPD Pocket. It turns out I don't use that as much as I thought I would, but I loved the diminutive size. I just bought me an iPad mini too. So I'm really a fan of the small stuff. And the other thing I like about the iPad mini, of course, is that I get to check out iPad OS, but I really don't need the huge screen. That's what I was thinking about the little PC, that, you know, it doesn't matter about the big screen for me. I knew it wasn't as powerful as it could be because of course it's just so small, but I think, you know, with the new ARM-based processors and stuff, that's going to also change. But so, you know, what you want to look at with stuff, it's interesting because GPD is a gaming company and they create these little gaming PCs, but I've bought two of them and they're really, really cute. One of the other really cool things I bought around the same time, and again, I don't know that they've updated it. It's actually a company in the UK called Planet Computers, and they make something called the Cosmo Communicator, which is an Android clamshell. It's an even tinier little laptop, but yet the keyboard, interestingly enough, has a surprising amount of contrast for how small it is. It's actually pretty easy to use. And so I really like that gadget. They were going to create a slide out version, you know, like the old style. And I was really looking forward to that because then I could use the touchscreen as normal and still have my slide out keyboard. Because the clamshell, that is the one problem. Sometimes you do actually want to use the touchscreen, but that's also kind of interesting because sometimes I'll connect a Braille display to that. So I'll have Braille, QWERTY, and touchscreen access all like at my fingertips. So that's a kind of an interesting little piece of kit that I enjoyed, but I wish, like I said, was a little more updated.
Jenny Axler there with her remarkable story. Coming up, we have got our review of the Envision glasses, a really exciting product. See if they are for you in just a few minutes here on RNIB Tech Talk. You're listening to the all-new RNIB Tech Talk with myself, Dave Williams, and co-host Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. How's it going for you guys so far?
Yeah, really good. Thank you, Dave. I'm Tasneem, and I have a background in psychology, not necessarily, you know, not technology, but I do love assistive tech. I'm a user of a screen reader and having deteriorated vision since birth. So really excited to be here, really looking forward to getting involved, sharing knowledge and learning from everybody.
Yeah, things are good with me as well. So I'm Callum. I do have quite a techie background. I've been interested in tech from a young age. Been completely blind since birth. So I'm a screen reader user. I work as an accessibility specialist. And basically anything that's, if it's technology related and accessible and I can use it, I'm interested.
Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman there are co-hosts here on RNIB Tech Talk. And if you'd like to reach the team, you can do so via email. That address, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Without any further ado, let's crack on with the latest Tech Talk news.
The American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, has announced the release of the Workplace Technology Study, a new report examining how technology in the workplace influences the experience of workers who are blind, low vision, or deafblind. Data was gathered from 323 American adults employed in February 2021. 59% of participants reported facing accessibility challenges when completing onboarding forms on paper, and 48% reported accessibility challenges with electronic onboarding forms. About 25% of participants reported that they could not fully access trainings required for their jobs. This impacted their productivity and sense of inclusion in the workplace. Participants reported a variety of accessibility challenges, including video conferencing, instant messaging, and documents prepared by sighted colleagues not properly formatted for accessibility. You can read the full report or an executive summary at afb.org/WTS. That's afb.org/WTS. Swiss-based startup Biped demonstrated its AI co-pilot for blind and visually impaired people at the Consumer Electronics Show 2022. Comprising a collar fitted with 3D cameras, Biped continuously monitors a 170-degree field of view for the user, detecting, tracking, and predicting the trajectory of all surrounding elements a few seconds in advance. It then filters the relevant information and warns the wearer via immersive 3D sounds. CEO and co-founder Mael Fabian, who drew on his own research background in this area, said, "This mirrors the way autonomous vehicles work. Biped will, for example, warn a user about a bike 12 meters ahead on the user's trajectory, but ignore an object that is closer but with no collision risk." Biped recently closed a $1.1 million funding round from Swiss and French investors and is now filing for Class 1 medical device status. The startup aims to launch the product in Switzerland in the second quarter of 2022 and then in the US in early 2023. We look forward to trialling Biped in the UK when it becomes available. And finally, the Independent newspaper in the UK reported on how the UK government's disability unit was slammed on Twitter for a post about Braille. The government tweet intended to celebrate World Braille Day prompted a backlash after it emerged that the tweet linked to a video featuring a soundtrack of bland synth-based Muzak with no audio description and no voice track. The Twitter website, of course, contains tips for making tweets more accessible. Do let us know if you've encountered inaccessible social media posts from organisations who should know better. Our email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Last month, the American Foundation for the Blind published a report into the state of technology and its accessibility for blind and partially sighted people in the workplace. And depressingly, there were lots of problems found to do with onboarding processes and issues around access to training and documents and all that stuff. Tasneem and Callum, you're both in work. Tasneem, you work in healthcare, and Callum, you're in BT. So just if you would summarize your own experience with technology in the workplace, what are the problems and how can they be overcome?
Well, I would say working for the NHS, more specifically, you know, I have worked in other places too prior to that, but I think it's more to do with everything from the recruitment process, you know, application forms, accessing those, all the way through to actually being in a job role and accessing various databases and things. I think JAWS is amazing, but obviously it has limitations and it's not necessarily compatible with all of the systems that we're looking at, patient records and things. So that's a major barrier. Like if I want to book annual leave, for example, that system is not accessible for me. If I want to look at my payslips, it's not something that I can do independently. So I have an access to work administrator who accesses those systems on my behalf and is then able to email me all of the relevant information. And I find that solution works really effectively for me. In previous roles, non-NHS, it's been more compatible. And that's because I've worked for, you know, sight loss organisations. So naturally, you would expect their systems to be compatible with screen reader software. And I can actually say that they have been. So that's been pretty impressive.
Callum?
Yeah, I mean, what I will say is that BT have been incredible whenever I've come across any kind of accessibility issues. And they are my first experience of a workplace as well. But I think the biggest access issue for me is the complexity of everything. You know, yes, access to work is available and it's amazing. But I think we all know there are issues with it. You know, they're not as quick as they could be. There's things like, you know, you can't make a claim until you've got a start date. But you also, in some cases, can't get a start date until you can say, yes, I can 100% do this job. From a usability point of view, we've had a few occasions where, because we're in a big, complex organisation, we've had a few issues where we've found a piece of software that's not accessible. So you go to the team that manage it and they say, oh, well, this team developed it. So you go to that team and they say, oh, no, but we got it from this third party and this third party are responsible. So then you've got to go to this third party company and start all over again explaining what the issue is.
Sometimes it can feel like you're being bounced around a bit between different teams and nobody really wants to take responsibility. Do you think sometimes, Callum, there is a particular problem now with updates? Things are changing so rapidly that updates get pushed out and they're not always tested for accessibility?
A lot of apps now are basically cloud-based. For example, Microsoft nowadays, you don't get a kind of, this new version is out, there's a new version of Outlook, for example, would you like to update or can we do it later? It's literally just, you know, you log in one morning and it's, hey, Outlook's updated, enjoy. And that's great. But if they've broken something there in accessibility and it's perhaps not been tested or not been noticed, and then you just auto update, you've got that version, and then you're you could be a bit stuck then.
Yeah, Tasneem, do you think the solution is more testing or more advocacy, or do you think the screen reader companies need to be doing more? Where do you think the responsibility lies?
That's a really interesting question, Dave. And just as Callum was talking, I was actually thinking of a couple of helpful solutions that might work. So in my experience, working with our IT help desk guys. Now they're really, really good and they're able to fix generic issues. They can remote into your machine. They can do a lot of things. And now if you start talking to them about JAWS screen reader, they have not got a clue. That's more second engineer line, as we call it in-house. That's more their kind of bag, but even they're not fully trained on it. So my view would be that they need to teach this stuff at graduate level. So it needs to start from the bottom up, if you like. So people are aware that this is how people with sight loss operate. This is the kind of thing that I think would have then a ripple effect, basically. And when those graduates are then going into IT positions, they've said, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, that's a module I covered, you know, screen reader software is something that I covered on my IT degree or whatever. So, you know, it's going to ring some bells rather than them not having you know, any solution. So I think that would be one way of addressing the issue. I think another way, to give you an example, I had an issue with a Dell machine, which is a common brand that we use. And there was an issue with the sound card and this JAWS screen reader. And I was unaware of this, and so was our IT help desk. So there was months and months, basically, of resourcing and trying to resolve the issue. And then in the end, it was a highly experienced JAWS engineer who resolved the issue. And then I was informed it's a common issue, you know, it's a common problem. Well, I wasn't made aware of it, that it was. I think it'd be helpful to have some sort of user guide to kind of say common issues. And, you know, the Dell sound card with JAWS could be added to it. So, you know, people are aware that, and it literally was, the resolution was changing a few settings, but the amount of distress it caused was unbelievable. And the amount of people that were attempting to resolve this basic issue, you know, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, I think a common user guide for all of the common issues faced with screen readers and mainstream products, whether that's Dell, whether that's HP or whatever, you know, to compile a guide like that would be really, really good. So that would be my other solution for this, as well as, you know, raising greater awareness for accessibility and screen readers. So if every organization is doing that, if every educational institute is doing that, then we're going to be in a much better place than we are currently.
I find that speaking with other blind and partially sighted people when I encounter problems is often the fastest way to find the solutions. But I'm sure this discussion is going to run and run. And we'd really love to hear about your experiences of technology and accessibility in the workplace. You can drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Here at RNIB, we're keen to encourage blind and partially sighted people to get the most from technology, whether that be specialist technology or mainstream kit. And we have a service that is available to assist with just that. Our Technology for Life team is a network of coordinators and volunteers right across the country who can be contacted by telephone and email. And we're delighted now to be joined by Technology for Life.
Hi, I'm Madeleine Bloom. I'm working for the Technology for Life team. We are the technology team of the RNIB that would deal with all your access technology, but also with your mainstream technology questions.
TFL's been around for a while.
TFL definitely has been around for quite a few years. We used to be known to customers under different sort of names before, but Technology for Life has been here for a few years now.
And who's in that team? Where do those people come from? Is it a big team?
We have Technology for Life coordinators across the country.
Where do those TFL advisors come from, Madeleine? Are they all people who've worked in technology or something else?
Everyone has a huge interest in technology. Some come from other backgrounds. Some have worked in technology for quite a while now. Some used to do product assessment before. I think we come from different paths of life. But I think that makes our team quite unique because we have so many areas that we cover and our knowledge that we can provide customers with is quite unique because we have got experts on Braille, experts on talking books and magnification. Every coordinator has different knowledge, and that is all gelled quite nicely in our Technology for Life team.
And is it, you know, mostly blind and partially sighted people or a bit of a mix?
I would say it's a bit of a mix. I believe we have in total 7 blind or partially sighted people with various sight loss in the team, and then we have sighted people in the team as well, and I think that is what makes the team so special, because we can talk to you if you are totally blind and you have a Braille question, because there will be a couple of us that definitely know the area as well, and then we have obviously questions where it's expected to have a bit of sight, in which case we can go to people who can still see the screen and get the information so that we always have the right answer for customers when they call us.
And give me a sense of the scope of questions that people can ask you. I mean, you mentioned obviously braille displays and magnification and screen reading and things like that, but you don't just support products that are sold by RNIB. It's a much wider range, I think.
This is, I think, what makes our team quite unique, again, because we are not exclusively concentrating on products that RNIB sells, but we cover the whole mainstream product and access technology product market. So if someone has heard about a particular product, but RNIB might not be selling it, we can still find out about the product and advise the customer accordingly. We speak quite often about smartphone technology, accessibility, and how to set up a smartphone. Smart TVs are quite popular. Braille displays, braille note takers, and computers and screen readers are definitely really famous as well. We do talk quite a lot about social media and can a blind person be presenting themselves on social media. To be honest, anything and everything to do with access technology would be areas that we cover. There's a huge element of smart home technology, so we do receive calls about smart washing machines, dryers, dishwashers, you know, all sorts of appliances that are very important, but that people that just lost their sight or need to buy a new appliance have a few questions about.
Is all the support remote, or is there any support available face to face?
Primarily at the moment our support is remote, but when customers feel that telephone or remote support is not for them, we are able to tailor the support so that we can help the customer however it's best to tailor their support needs when they get in touch.
So who is eligible to use the service? It's blind and partially sighted people. Do I have to prove that when I call up, or how does that work?
No, definitely not. You don't have to prove that. So blind and partially sighted people, their family and friends, but also any other services that possibly support blind or partially sighted people in any sort of, in any way. So you don't need to prove that you are eligible to speak to us. So
that's fabulous, Madeline. So what are the ways in which we can get in contact with you then?
Yeah, just give us a call via our RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 and ask for the Technology for Life team. Or you can send us an email to TFL for Technology for Life at rnib.org.uk. So that's TFL at rnib.org.uk.
Madeline Bloom from RNIB's Technology for Life team, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here on RNIB Tech Talk, we're interested in all technology, whether it be mainstream and accidentally accessible, or a specialist piece of kit that has been designed specifically for blind and partially sighted people. The Envision glasses, described by the manufacturer as AI for your eyes, hear what you want to see, feature the ability to scan text, describe scenes, and recognise faces. This piece of premium assistive technology features a wide-angle camera, directional audio, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connectivity, offer up to 6 hours battery life, and weigh less than 50 grams. But what are they actually like to use? Tasni Marshad has been giving them a try.
I'm Tasni, and welcome to the Tech Talk mini demonstration of the Envision smart glasses, spelt E for Echo, N for Norman, Vision, all one word, Envision smart glasses. As the name suggests, it's a wearable device and it has 9 options. Let's take a quick look at the home screen together.
Screen. Call. Identify. Find. Device settings. Feature preferences. Help. Feature preference and device setting. Find. Identify. Call. Read. Home.
Let's see what home does if I double tap on it.
It is 2038. Today is Saturday. Saturday, the 15th of January. Battery level is at 85%. You are connected to eHub to UWN.
Okay, so that's really helpful to know. Look at one of its reading features randomly from a page in a book. That sound means that it's processing. Let's see what it makes of it.
Can result in a range of problems and lead to long-term difficulties that make thee a struggle. With this in mind, clinical psychologist Dr. Helen Kennerly has denied this highly acclaimed CBT-focused self-help program to help you understand...
Take a look at one of its describe and identify features. That's correct. I'm in my living room and I was looking directly at the TV. Take a look at one of its identifying features with regards to money.
Recognize cap. Searching for British pound. 10 British pounds. 10 British pounds. 10 British pounds. 10 British pounds. 10 British pounds.
Brilliant. That's great because I have a £10 note in my hand. Wonderful. It will now detect a different note.
20 British pounds. 20 British pounds. 20 British pounds.
That's correct, because I was holding up a different note, £20 note. Summary of the InVision glasses. Points to support. Light wearable. Charge quickly. Can be connected to Bluetooth earphones. And also they have a separate app which you can have on your portable devices and use a calling feature. Points against is the price, which is £3,300, around approximate price including VAT from sightandsound.co.uk, and they will need to charge daily, especially if you're using them frequently, and also good lighting is essential.
And thanks very much to Taz Arshad there with your demonstration of the InVision glasses. And Taz, you're still with us. Who are these for? Are they aimed at somebody who's totally blind or really only for somebody who's partially sighted?
I think it depends on the individual and their sight. So I would probably say both, but erring more towards for people who have low vision, purely because it's very difficult if you're totally blind. I have very low vision myself and I really struggled with getting the camera exactly to the point where the text was. And it took multiple attempts to do that, despite the fact that you have audio feedback. So I think it'd be very challenging for somebody who has no vision at all, and perhaps a little bit easier for somebody who has low vision. But even if you have very low vision, similar to myself, I think it still would be quite challenging.
Now, clearly, for most people, this will be a funded purchase, probably with Disabled Students Allowance or Access to Work, one of those funding schemes. If you had to buy the InVision glasses with your own money, Taz, would you?
It's a very interesting and challenging question, Dave. I think, again, it's going to be very much it depends. I would highly recommend people to get themselves a demonstration. Test them out, road test them thoroughly, and then make an informed and balanced decision as to whether that product is for you.
We return now to our interview with Jenny Axler, the remarkable American lady whose life took her to South Korea to pursue a job in assistive technology. Given that we as blind people don't always benefit from the larger screen size, obviously somebody who's low vision may do, why would a totally blind person consider getting an iPad or any tablet, come to that?
I think what I like about it is the exploration of layout. When I got my first iPad years and years and years ago, actually my husband got one and I just got to play with it sometimes. But the thing that I was enthralled with, because this is really the first large touchscreen we could use. Of course, the iPhone had been out a little bit, but one of the things that I did was look at the Yahoo webpage and being able to actually understand the structure. You know, when you look at it on a PC or with JAWS, basically, you know, you've got headings and you've got like 150 links, and it's just one big mass of information. But when you touch it on a screen, all of a sudden, you know, hey, look, this has sensible sections. And all of a sudden, you can actually just jump to one of those, you know, much more easily. And it makes more sense. It gives you this spatial orientation to things that you just don't get. Now, you can somewhat get that, of course, on the touchscreen of a PC. And a lot of those, you know, a lot of PCs have that. But you just sort of have more information to you available in a way that I think more parallels what the visual world deals with. And I think it makes me understand a little bit more about what's going on in the sighted world, what everyone else is doing, because I have that understanding of the spatial layout and how applications are laid out and how web pages are laid out. So I guess for me, that's one of the biggest reasons. You know, you can touch a map a lot of times, and if there's a text label, you can get that. There's a lot of interactive applications, even for accessibility, that are, you know, based on touchscreens or even games, you know, sometimes. So I think it just adds another dimension to what you're able to do and what you're able to experience.
In terms of accessibility and technology, where do you think the greatest challenges lie?
It is almost difficult to answer because technology is growing so quickly, and there's so much, you know, now with VR and with AI, and so many things are happening, and a lot of it is based on image, of course. It's interesting because in one way, we are much more equivalent in what we can do. For example, virtual assistants and smart home assistants, you know, of course, these were accessible right out of the box. They work with voice. This is fantastic. So some technologies have actually sort of brought us on board with it and have actually increased what we're able to do parallel to everyone else. Some other things, I think, actually are going to grow leaps and bounds ahead of us. And I think that the challenge is really going to be keeping up and even trying to find equivalents. You know, I don't know how you do some of the things that you're going to do in the metaverse. I suppose we come up with some kind of virtual exploration. So I don't know. I think probably the biggest challenge has always been keeping up with it and finding accessible ways to do the things that everyone else is doing. And I think that's always going to be the challenge, because assistive technology, the thing that I always say is that in order for it to assist, the technology has to exist first. So that means inherently assistive tech is always going to be behind the technology that exists, because you can't assist with it until it exists. So I think that's always going to be our biggest challenge. I actually think the gap is narrower than it used to be, but the interesting thing is that people that didn't grow up in the time that you and I grew up, the people that are now experiencing that, they have an expectation of immediacy. So they don't always appreciate that this is actually, it's grown by leaps and bounds, but I think it's still a challenge. It's always going to be. And the faster the technology grows, we're always going to have to find workarounds, I guess.
What would be a top tech tip from you, Jenny Axler?
There's so much that you can do with your camera and with AI now. And so I think the biggest thing that I always want people to do is to do more by yourself, because you can with the technology. There's so many different things. And I also think that there are different types of interfaces for different people. So you need to find what works for you. But there's so many different options now that something will work for you.
So don't give up, basically. Keep trying. Keep trying until you find the thing that works for you.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest ones. Even on our BrailleSense, for example, we now, especially with BrailleSense 6, can really use a lot of Android apps. And a lot of people don't want to go into the Android system. They want to only use what we create. I wanted to do demos, and I wanted to be able to do a direct screen recording. And there are tons of screen recorders out there. And I remember, though, that most of them were not accessible at all. A lot of them work in the notification shade. They're just really difficult to use. And I tried like 9 of them. And the 10th one turned out to be super accessible. And I use it to this day. And that's the thing. It only takes one. So I guess what I mean is, do find what works for you. And exactly what you said, don't give up. And in the mainstream, just because it's a mainstream thing, there are so many things now that are inherently accessible, even if they are not meant to be, or even if they weren't created to be. There just are so many ways to do different things. For translation, for example, I've tried all different ways. I've tried it on my iPhone, on my iPad, on my BrailleSense. I've tried different apps. And so there are just so many different ways to do everything. If one or two of them don't work, it doesn't mean that you can't do it. Maybe it will take the 9th or 10th app. But like I said, all it takes is one. That's it. All you need to find is the one that works. So I guess continue looking until you do find the one that works, because these days there generally is one to do just about everything you want. Video creation was something I never thought I'd be able to do. And now, especially with something like this Blackmagic 8-10 Mini, or even again, the BrailleSense 6, because of there's some visual recording apps that I found, you know, there are ways to do almost anything you want.
And talk to other blind people would be my advice.
Yes, that, yes.
You know, I learned so much from just asking questions and listening to other blind people that I might not discover myself, or from reading documentation. You know, those little nuggets of, you know, how to achieve a particular task, how to hold your phone, you know, maybe getting a particular kind of mount to put your phone,
yes,
in the right position,
right,
for recording or whatever it might, yep, be. So, yep, yeah, don't be afraid to ask, I think it would be mine. Tell us how people can find out more about the BrailleSense 6.
There's all kinds of different ways. I suppose if you're in the UK, of course, Sight and Sound is your best bet. They are our dealer there. The HIMSS International YouTube channel also has tons of training material. It also has a really good, if I may say so myself, a really good overview of the BrailleSense 6. So if you just want to know about it, you can, you know, take 20 minutes and get a lot of demoing of the various things and how fast it is and everything. Let's see. Of course, you can email HIMSS, H-I-M-S, at selvashc, that's selvashc.com. That directly goes to us. If you are in the United States or Canada, of course, you can contact HIMSS Incorporated, which is hims-inc.com. So, you know, again, depending on where you're listening, but for sure in the UK, Sight and Sound is your one-stop shop for all things BrailleSense and all things HIMSS.
Jenny Axler, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it. That's all we've got time for this time on RNIB Tech Talk. Thanks very much for listening. We really appreciate that. We made it, Tasneem and Callum. We got here. We're at the end.
We did. Wonderful. Absolutely brilliant.
Don't forget, of course, if you've got a technology problem or question, our Technology for Life team are just a phone call or an email away. You can write to tfl@rnib.org.uk. That's tfl@rnib.org.uk. Or you can contact Technology for Life via the RNIB helpline. That telephone number, it's 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. And of course, if you would like to contact us at Tech Talk, you can write to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I've been Dave Williams, and from my co-hosts Tasneem and Callum, until next time, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.